Welcome to the Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. I'm Lucy.
And I'm Spencer.
And you are joining us for our weekly conversation on all things early childhood development and education related.
Each week we dive into a topic that we hope excites you as much as it excites us.
Okay, Spencer. Once upon a time, there were three little pigs and they were brothers. And one day they decided, this is so weird to tell you this while I'm staring at you. There's a point to this, I promise. One day, they decided that they were going to build themselves some houses. The first little pig wanted the work to be done very quickly, and he didn't care about his house being strong. So he built his house out of straw. The second brother wanted his house to be a little bit stronger, but he still didn't want it to take very long. So he built his house out of sticks. The third brother wanted his house to be very strong, and he did not care how long it would take to build, so he built his house out of bricks, and they were all happy. But little did they know, somebody was watching, the big, bad wolf, and he wanted to eat those little piggies. So along he came to the first house. There's a point to this, I really promise, Spencer.
Never heard the story.
little pig, let me come in.
You're actually very good at storytelling.
Thank you.
And then the wolf's phone chimed.
Now I hear my chinny chin chin. Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down. So he and he and he the house down. We'll see how that sounds on the recording. The pig was so afraid, he ran to his brother's house, the house made out of sticks. And there they waited. Along came the big bad wolf. Little pigs, let me come in. Not by the hairs of our chinny chin chins. Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down. So he and he puffed and he the house down. They were so afraid, so they ran to their brother's house, the house made out of bricks, and there they waited. Along came the big bad wolf. Little pigs, let me come in. Not by the hairs of our chinny chin chins. Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down. So he huffed and he puffed and he but nothing happened. So he huffed and he but still nothing happened. So he decided to try one final time, and he huffed and he puffed harder than he had ever huffed and puffed before. He and he but that house would not fall down. By now, the wolf was getting pretty hungry and pretty tired, and kind of out of breath from all of the huffing and puffing. So he decided to give up, and he went to McDonald's and got himself a bacon cheeseburger, and he never bothered the three little pigs again. And they all lived happily ever after in their house made out of bricks. The end.
Yay! Very good.
Thank you.
I was intrigued.
Thank you. I tell this story a minimum of twice a day, and have been for the last 2 or 3 months of my life. So today we are going to talk about repetition and why does it happen, why it's necessary, and what to look out for. And any parents out there, this is not an abnormal thing. You know what I'm talking about. Your child has a thing that they want to do or read or watch every single day. So do you have a story of like something that you always wanted to repeat as a child, something you always liked to do or watch, or like an imaginary game you always played?
I feel like I've been really put on the spot here because I have like 1,000 answers and none of them are really like coming desperately to mind. Okay. You know what? I had a really good one that my grandmother would tell me, and it was, I'm still obsessed with the story. I want to illustrate it one day. It was called Sea Grape Jelly. And it was a story that she would tell me And she told me that her father told her and her father's father told him. So it's a family story.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much.
And it's about this little girl. And she, bear in mind, my grandmother's from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And it was, there was sea grapes and there was jelly. And the only place that would make the sea grape jelly was a lighthouse in the middle of the ocean on a big craggy rock. And so she'd go with her father to go get some, and you change it depending on, you know, the gender of like your child that you're telling it to.
Uh-huh.
And so they would take the ferry every Sunday and they would go get their sea grape jelly. Now, one day her father was on a trip. And so she really wanted some sea grape jelly, but it was a stormy day and the boat, the ferry was not coming, but she wanted her sea grape jelly. She jumped into the ocean and she swam all the way to that lighthouse in the middle of the island, of middle of the ocean on the craggy rock island to get her sea grape jelly. And she gets there and they're shocked. Where did you come from? How did you get here? And she explains, I just really wanted my sea grape jelly. So I swam through all the currents and all the waves to get my sea grape jelly. And they're so impressed with her. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. Keep going.
I have no clue. I think it's like that gelatinous stuff you see sometimes that like washes up. That's like seaweed. Gross. I don't know. In my head, it sounded great. The story was always told to me. So she gets her sea grape jelly and they warm her up by the fire and they give her a big piece of toast and they slather on some sea grape jelly and she gets to nod off having had finished her tiring day watching the fire eating her sea grape jelly toast as she feels successful. That's it. That's the story. She gets her sea grape jelly. So I don't know where it came from. My grandmother would tell me that story all the time when she was putting me to sleep.
So I love that.
No moral. I don't know. Like, be tough and brave and don't swim across oceans. Like,
well, now is as good a time as any to bring this up. I don't particularly like the story of the three little pigs.
I don't either. The moral is very skewed.
Yeah. And I guess the moral is that if you want something to stay standing, you have to put the time into it. Like, you know, but I also have this weird thing of like, wolves eat pig, like would eat a pig, and that's okay for them to eat a pig. Like, that's nature. They had to do that to survive. So it's weird to have these stories where the little animals get away from the animals who have to eat. I don't particularly like it. This was requested one time from Leo. He must have seen, I think maybe it was on Mouse and Cookie that they have an episode, or if you give a mouse a cookie that they talk about it. And so he requested it one time when he was taking a nap. And then he decided that is what we have to do every single time that.
I like that.
Every single time he goes to bed, he has to have this story. I have to tell him the story. But yeah, that is the thing with children. We do a lot of things that we don't really love to. But so let's talk about repetition.
In her 1915 address to the National Education Association, Dr. Maria Montessori recounted a story of a three-year-old student who was deeply absorbed in a wooden block activity. Montessori stated that she had never seen a look of such fixedness as the child worked on the activity, repeating it more than 40 times. When the child finally stopped, without external interruption, Montessori stated that the child looked around with an expression of deep satisfaction and peace. Montessori's observation was that attention and repetition could resolve the instability of concentration that is characteristic of young children.
So this is an interesting story. One, to bring two points. One, repetition is actually not talked about. In a second, we'll talk about this. It's not talked about in a lot of studies. Montessori is kind of the reason why we talk about repetition in childhood, why we know that it's a good thing to do. Well, she's not why we know that it strengthens neural pathways, but that's why we have any association with repetition and early childhood is pretty much these observations by Maria Montessori. So in a Montessori school, a lot of what they do in there is focused on supporting this repetition.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But it's not just important for Montessori schools, and it happens all the time. The other thing that it brings to light is that this is kind of a natural thing that children do, this repetition. And the last one that it really brings to light is the fact that they need it. She was given the space to repeat this activity over and over again, and she did it until she could do it, until she was able to do it successfully. And she really learned something from it. So this is a really interesting topic.
Now I'm obsessed with this. I mean, it's fascinating to hear because it makes sense. I love the topics that just, they're common sense when you think about them.
Isn't it crazy that there are like so few places that talk about this though? That like floored me because it's something we talk about all the time. Like you need repetition to learn. I haven't addressed the subject
personally. Like this is not that familiar to me.
Oh, really? Oh, I just feel like, I feel like all the time but maybe it's even like a church foundation is how we talk about, like you learn from repetition, you learn from repetition. And I feel like it's something I've talked about in this podcast before. Like when we repeat topics, I'll be like, this is kind of an overview or like, this is a repetition, but that's good because we've learned from repetition. I feel like it's a really big factor in my understanding of education. And so it's very funny. Like it just floored me that there is not a whole lot of research, but it's one of those things to me that it just makes sense. And there is some research, I promise.
I believe you. I'm just excited to like understand this on a little. I understand repetition on an older learning scale because a lot of it makes sense. When considering, instantly, when you talk about repetition in education, I think of literacy skills and language skills, and not specifically first language, as in like second, third languages. Repetition is a big part about understanding. So, no, I found that fascinating.
Right. And I think that there are different categories. I mentioned a study in a minute, and it actually... a huge chunk of it is it was a really tedious read actually. I'm not going to go through all of it, I promise. But one of the things that they talk a lot in that study is that they were like, it's really hard to define repetition. There's a lot of different types of repetition. You have this repetition that is self-led, and you have this repetition that is, I guess maybe even kind of three categories. You have like self-led, where it's entirely motivated by the child. You have kind of an encouraged repetition, where somebody is just kind of setting up an environment where repetition can take place. And you have kind of this repetition that we think of more in learning. We think like more of this rote memorization kind of a thing, like, you know, flashcards or like times tables where you have to.
Yeah.
Like you think of it as older,
especially.
But what we know for everyone, but especially when we're talking about early childhood, again, for everyone, this is true, but especially children, something that is self-motivated, self-initiated is going to be a lot more effective than something that is required or forced.
I could not emphasize that point enough. I don't know if you want to keep this in here, but it was a fascinating study I read recently. During the slavery abolitionist movement, that was one of the greatest ways that abolitionists were able to prove their point with psychological studies were done on northern labor farms versus southern. Essentially, they compared productivity levels, and they found time and time again that if you're more motivated, you have self-autonomy to choose what you want to do. You will work harder, you will work faster, and you'll be more interested in the outcome of a product. And this was a huge portion of what led to the abolition of slavery in Europe, especially, was the understanding that people will, if not motivated by intrinsic values, will not work harder. No one wants to work for nothing or work because someone told them to do so. You will work initially harder based on your internal values and what you believe is correct.
That's a perfect tie-in. That's exactly right.
Thank you.
That's exactly what we're talking about. That like, yeah, you can force somebody to do something. Is it going to change that person or make that person better? Is it going to be valuable work? Is it going to be good quality?
On like life relationships too. Like,
anything that's forced is probably not going to be things, great.
It needs to be self-motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And you can push towards people self-motivating. You can encourage.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk about that a lot too. Like, obviously, I love my tips. How can we support this? But yeah, most of this is allowing room for a child to do this. Okay, so repetition, like what is repetition? We kind of talked a little bit about this. Repetition doesn't necessarily mean reading the same story or completing the same activity over and over again, although it can. But repetition refers to any form of work that provides the child with opportunities to practice a skill or knowledge area. So let's see how to word this in better words than that, that I feel like is a little confusing. So the activity might be reading a story over and over again, but the reason that they're drawn to that is because they are working on a specific skill. And we might not know what that skill is. We might not know what they're trying to learn or understand. And that is another reason why forcing it is not a great thing, because we don't know what their brain is wanting to learn at that time. But their brain knows what it wants to learn. And so it's going to seek out this repetitive activity.
Makes sense, because you're literally seeking the, what's the word? That gratification almost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So repetition may also come from routine or the environment. Knowing what to expect and having things happen in an ordered way helps children to know what to expect and feel at ease. When the environment is predictable, a child feels safe and secure, which establishes the optimal environment for learning.
But it makes sense too, because we tend to thrive better in situations. I mean, this has been proven time and time again. A comfortable environment breeds productivity. And that's why they emphasize the Reggio philosophy in Montessori, is it's attractive and comforting environments versus overstimulation.
Right. Well, who, what's his name? Something hierarchy of needs. Whose hierarchy of needs is
that? Oh gosh, I know what you're talking about.
Maslow. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, he talks all about it. Like, that's great if you are teaching things. A person's not going to pay attention to it until they have their needs met. If they are starving, it doesn't matter how good of a teacher you are. They need food first. You know, like, you have to set up an environment.
It's personal.
This is super personal. This is super personal for me. I cannot do hungry. Everyone has different things that they can do. A hungry me and a hungry Leo. Yep. Like, that is something that we've learned.
Lucy, you and I will get each other very hard in this point.
Yes. Whereas, like, John can not eat forever.
I don't get that. I'm always eating at work. And I think that I get a lot of resentment for it. And I'm like, I need to eat. I'm so...
You will not like me. And like, John has learned that of like, it is very, very important for our relationship that I am well fed.
Yep. Evan understands that.
Yeah. We're probably not going to have misunderstandings. We're probably not going to have arguments if I am well fed and not PMSing.
When you consider the quick dopamine rush that especially easy sugars release, it just makes sense. Like, bad time, eat some sugar. It's I just saw this really cool video about this kid. It was cool because of the resolution in the comments on it. This kid was losing it in the backseat, and her mom's going, "I don't understand why you're so upset. Why are you so upset? I just want to talk to your teacher. There's nothing wrong." And finally she goes, "If we go talk to my teacher, are we still going to have time to get the donut you promised me?" And her mom realizes she's not been losing it about the teacher, the school, the trip, any of it. It's she's been really worried her treat was not going to come because of this diversion. So fast forward 20 minutes later, she's eating her donut. She's in her class. It was like a ballet class. And she's happy as a clam. Like, and it was, she just needed that little energy fix, that little sugar rush. It was awesome.
Yep. I feel that on a very personal level. Hence why often Leo and I are making food a lot of times, like on Instagram and in our stories and stuff. We're often doing little activities where we're making food.
Food mostly is happiness. Because,
yeah, it's that often it's when we want to kill each other, or I'm like, oh, how are we going to survive this day with just the two of us? add food in, and we have a very, very good day.
It makes sense. Food is one of our most, okay, this is my big thing about food, especially, it's one of our most basic carnal needs. Mm-hmm. So it might as well be enjoyable.
Exactly.
Yep.
Okay. So going into this study, we're not going to like dwell on this, but I think it's interesting to talk about. And it's nice to know that I have some support from this. There actually is a lot of discussion about repetition in a lot of studies, but the research is generally focused on atypical rather than typical development. When we think of repetition, rumination, fixation, when we think of these things, we tend to think about somebody who, like autism is a huge one, or like compulsions. But yeah, so it focuses on cases of psychopathology. Research on typically developing children is limited, and what is available mostly concerns repetition in infancy, which still fits in the realm of our podcast. So I want to talk about this really quickly. So Piaget commented on repetitive motor behavior in infants, which was later empirically supported by Thelen, which I'm not really familiar with Thelen.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar.
But this is cool. Who identified 47 motor patterns involving legs, feet, arms, hands, fingers, head, and torso in infants, which we see like that very specific movement that infants, little infants do. Yeah, they have these reflexes. They have these repetitive movements that they make. At the point when this particular study that I'm talking about was published, repetition among typically developing children was limited to a survey conducted by Evans and a group of people.
Love it.
Which asked parents about their typically developing children's compulsive-like behavior, including repetition in infancy and preschool.
Okay.
Parents reported repetitive behavior. Say that. That's really hard to say.
Parents reported repetitive.
Lots of like R's and P's. Record a video of your saying that 5 times fast and put it on Instagram.
Yeah, submit it. We'll give you $5. Yes.
Okay. Parents reported repetitive behavior in their children's daily activities, with repetition peaking between 12 and 47 months of age, or about 4 years old for those of us
Thank you for doing that, because the whole month thing still throws me off.
For me too. People ask me how old Leo is, and I'm like, between 2 and 3.
I'm not doing the month thing. Like I weeks I'm a little better at, but months, no, like especially at that amount. 24 months, you're 2. The end. We're stopping right there. I don't need any more detail than that.
Yeah. Like, and it makes sense. I don't know. There is like difference in development and all these different, but like, I sure don't know how many months Leo is.
Come on, Lucy. You should know this. Developmental milestones and all. I'm being really sarcastic.
People will say months to me. I'll be like, oh yeah, he's almost 3. And they'll be like, oh, my son is. Blah, blah, blah.
And I'll be like, I'm like, oh,
cool, okay.
That's great. Good for you.
Yeah.
Is that 24? 36. 36 months is 3 years old. Just did that math real quick. I'm watching people.
Very good.
Thank you. I'm smart.
I will never know. That's sounds great.
I'm intelligent. I'm doing fine with myself.
I'm not.
Fair enough. Are any of us?
We're all just struggling through. Okay. So although this is all like based on parental reports and observations, it does provide a starting point for the study of repetition as characteristic preschool behavior. So like this really is a preschool centric thing. Okay. So this study is called A Natural History of Repetition. And this suggests a ubiquity of repetition. So all children in the study engaged in motor repetition. Repetition also occurred throughout all free play activities. So construction, animation, fantasy play, rough and tumble play, and undirected activities. Although repetition was not equally distributed across activities. Motor repetition, for example, was not equal across ages. Younger children engage in more motor repetition than older children, which makes a lot of sense, right? That's what
it does.
The base of younger children, babies are really focusing. That's why there's so much repetition talked about with infants, because it's so much motor repetition as they're crawling and standing, as they're understanding their body. Preschoolers, we start seeing more focused repetitions of them playing the same game over and over again, using the same game words. The
interesting jokes. I love when they hit, that's not preschool technically, it's more pre-K, when they start making those knock knock, who's there, there's a shoe.
Well, shoo-hoo. Even like, I feel like the precursor of that, a really significant milestone, like toddlers, I learned this from my sister-in-law, who is a speech language pathologist. Leo did this, and she was like, that's good. That's good. Is that he did something that we all laughed. And so he did it again and again and again. And she was like,
and there it is. Oh,
that's an important milestone. He's got that. Like, and that is totally the precursor of a joke of like, oh, you laughed one time at this joke. Oh, this joke is really funny. I'm gonna
keep it going
two times. And you know, as we get older, we realize that that makes jokes feel less funny, unless you're my dad, in which case they get funnier each time you tell them to him, not to the rest of us.
I love your dad. I love dad jokes are the funniest thing, because it's just like, well, I came to my dad's house the other night, my parents' house, and my dad, I can't even tell you what the joke was. He made some really weird joke. I didn't understand it. My whole family rolled their eyes, and apparently he watched one TikTok video of this weird joke. Everybody laughed at him the one time, so he keeps repeating this joke over and over, and he's driving everybody nuts.
What is it? Do you remember what
it is? I don't remember. It was so niche. Oh my
goodness, that's so funny. It was so
niche, and I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, you haven't seen it? And I was like, no. I don't know what you're talking about.
What a dad thing to do.
Yep.
And what a preschooler thing to do. Like, dads and preschoolers, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah, no, this is true. I admit this. Yeah. This is very accurate.
Yeah, but yeah, I love that. That's such a good point, where they tell the joke over and over again.
And it's like, ha-ha.
But that is important. Their brain is working on something very specific. It's important for their development. So we have to just...
For my dad's development.
For your dad, we get to not have to, we don't have to laugh anymore.
He doesn't deserve it.
Okay. So this already has been very science heavy. We're going to delve into the science even more.
I'm ready for it. Give me the science.
Okay. Do you want to read that first paragraph?
Okay. So the science behind repetition. Learning requires electrical energy to create neural connections. The less automatic something is, the more energy is required to create the connection. Makes sense. In adults, these neural connections are well developed based on previous experiences, repetition, and practice. This allows them to do things like driving a car or doing basic math by expending very little effort. That makes sense. I mean, it's fascinating when you think about it, how many things you put on autopilot. And it's also why school and trades make sense, because you become well-mannered in a certain subject because you get used to doing it every day.
Mm-hmm. It becomes a second nature.
In children, these neural connections are only beginning to be formed. Repetition is a necessary building block that allows them to strengthen the connections in the brain that help them learn. As your child's brain develops in their first 5 years, they will need to use and reuse connections between ideas to build strong foundations for lifelong learning.
Okay, so I think we talk about this a little bit later too, but it's a little bit of a use it or lose it scenario at this stage of your life. Their brain has so much information in it that the things that they are using over and over again, they're keeping. Mm. The rest of it, they're pruning out the rest of this information. Oh, I don't actually need that as constant, like constantly in my brain. Let's get rid of that one. Let's keep this one. And we talk about this a lot when I worked for the company Swim Kids. And we do a lot of parent education on why swimming is really, really a cool thing mm-hmm. for children, is because it reinforces a lot of neural pathways, especially with movement. Uh-huh. Yeah, that body, that makes, the motor connections. That makes connections. A lot of sense. Yeah, and so we'd kind of explain it to parents as like, it's kind of like a road. You first get this, it's a lot like, your brain is a lot like roads in Virginia, roads out east, thank where God. A road was originally like a deer path. And then the hunters were on it quite a bit. And we slowly build it up until it becomes this main road. It's like 95 and this major highway. As it's used more and more, it's the same thing with like a synapsis in your brain.
We're trying really hard to make 95 bigger, but it's not working quite as well as the deer path to road. It's
no, it's not. Yep. No. We're trying.
But it makes sense. I would always give some of our infants tools into which to create art. And it might seem rudimentary and like they're not learning anything, but they are, by repetitively grasping a utensil, they're getting ready for using a brush or pen or pencil in the future.
Yeah, well, I think maybe that's also why this has become such a normal part of my educator vernacular. I bet you also had to use this a bit with parent education with art, is that when I was a nature teacher, there was so much of what I talked about was super repetitive. We're coming back and we're doing this activity again. Oh, they're doing this. Like,
I especially felt that with infants and younger children.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness. When I did baby swimming lessons, I felt so like, I'd be like, oh, we're doing the same thing every single class. But
that's how you,
we talk about that so much, is that is how children learn. You're turning those deer paths into a major highway.
I like this quote.
And if you don't do it,
deer paths to highways.
Oh yeah, deer paths to highways. Like, and if you're not doing that, then the roads get grown over. Like they get pruned. It gets taken out. Yeah. So this pretty much says what I said it, but in more scientific terms. So a baby is born with a brain ready to learn. Their brain cells reach out and make neural connections with each new experience stimulated by their environment. The connections are called synapses. Synapses.
You're confusing me. Yeah, I'm not synapses. Sure.
Probably either one. That's fine. Okay. As these synapses are stimulated over and over, the connections become hardwired. During early childhood, the brain undergoes extensive growth. Connections that are regularly used will be kept, and those that are not will be pruned. Children are learning each day through every experience, forming the foundational brain development for all learning later in life. I love that idea too. Yeah. So everything you learn, like nothing you do as an adult is something that you like, you didn't jump straight to that knowledge. Everything was built on when you were a child, like your whole life built you up to this point that you're able to do something. That I'm gonna cut that.
That was no, I stupid. Love that. That makes sense.
I didn't say anything important. So as a parent or teacher, your interactions and support in the early years have a great impact on your child's development. We talk about that so much. And luckily, other people are starting to figure that out as well. We know that early learning has a significant impact on the whole rest of your life. And this is why. So in short, why is repetition important? So there's just a list.
In short, repetition helps to strengthen the brain's neural processors for learning.
Okay. So deer paths. Repetition teaches children to practice, master, and retain knowledge.
Repetition provides the opportunity for practice and reinforcement.
That sounds like the same thing. I apparently did not read these ones very thoroughly.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Repetition. Like they're kind of different, but repetition is needed for skill mastery and success.
Man, is that true?
And we learn through repetition. So some of these are a little repetitive, but that's how we learn.
I just had someone pop up my page about an hour ago that was talking about the fact that another live painter like myself, that he goes out and he does live paintings just of nature because he needs to practice. And I'm like, I need to be doing that. So,
oh, that makes sense.
Work on that color building. Children learn through repetition and memorization.
Children learn self-discipline and critical reflection through repetition. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Through repetition of movement, coordination's improved. That makes a lot of sense. Think of ballet dancers.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to that one about self-discipline and critical reflection, that's one of the fundamentals of Montessori, is that that's one of the reasons why they do their works, is focusing on attention span and self-discipline, the control to focus on an activity for a longer period of time, which again, we've talked about Montessori and how like that's not always my favorite, but there are certain aspects of Montessori that I think are so cool. And they really do an amazing job of supporting this attention span and providing a space for repetition.
Yep, makes sense. I like it.
So movement through repetition, children learn to differentiate variations and differences in the world around them.
Through repetition, children develop the confidence to progress.
Mm, I like that one.
Because it makes sense.
Yeah. More confident. Yeah. We're not really explaining these because I feel like most of these are really
straightforward.
Self-explanatory. Yeah. Repetition teaches children to internalize concepts.
Higher order repetition, such as synthesis, analysis, and application, develop the child's intelligence.
Okay. And going back to that study, so this is a longer bullet point, but I think it's really, really interesting. So research examining motor skill acquisition suggests that early movements vary highly, but become more stable as the skill develops. So that's why you see babies, their movements are really wild, and then they all become pretty uniform. And once it becomes more uniform, it means that they're pretty close to mastering that skill and moving on to a new one.
That's cool. I like, that's a really good milestone to keep, to bear in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. As the progression from variable to stable movements would indicate the shift from novice to expert, it could help adults recognize if mastery has been achieved and when a child is ready to move on to the next activity. Yeah. So like as an adult, such a cool thing to keep in mind, because sometimes it's really hard to tell, especially like, you know, when you get into older ages, did they master the two times table? It's very so clear cut. But when you're working in early childhood, so much of what they need to master is, can they move their body the right way?
Right.
Can they speak correctly? Can they interact with other people? It's like their milestones are so much more kind of vague. But so I love having a little bit more of an indication of like, are they doing it super differently every single time? Are they doing it where it's like really consistent every single time? Once it starts to get pretty consistent, then it means that they're probably ready to move on to a new skill that you can start pushing them to introducing more variation.
That's a pretty good tip when considering.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So I wanted to bring that back. Again, I read the whole study, so I had to pull out some things when I could. And clearly I'm not a scientist either. So
self-reflection and patience, Lucy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So going back to this idea that repetition is often associated with more atypical development, I do want to talk about when we should pay more attention, when we should maybe be a little concerned that the repetition is turning into a fixation.
I was wondering if you were going to come into this.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about it in depth. There's two episodes that we have, at least two. Does your mom talk about early intervention and
he does, yeah,
seeking help? Okay. Yeah. So that is another good one. I don't remember what, do you know the episode number?
Goodness gracious.
You look that up while I'm saying this. Okay. Yeah. So we have a couple. Episode 9, we have an interview with an early interventionist. Episode 12, we have an interview with a special education and autism teacher. And episode 24
is interview with a speech and language pathologist.
And so those are really good episodes to look at. Like, it's always nice to hear from people who know what they're talking about. So I urge you to go listen to those more in depth if you have more questions. But so we're going to just kind of briefly cover this. So everyone engages in some form of repetitive behavior. Typical examples exhibited by people of all ages are like what I'm doing right now. I'm shaking my legs. I always shake my legs when I'm sitting. You twirl your hair, click your pen. But repetitions can sometimes signify more. People with a developmental disability often, but not always. But also, I read a couple of different articles and such that talked about this. And it's like, there are some exceptions, but pretty much always.
It's the norm. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. It's neurodivergency.
Mm-hmm. So they exhibit repetitive behaviors. This is most prevalent in people who have been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. At its core, these behaviors refer to any repetition of physical movements and or repetition of vocal sounds and can include the repeated moving of objects or repetition of sounds or words that do not have a purpose.
Mm.
So this is a list of common repetitive behaviors, but it's definitely not limited to this. There's a really long list. Or do you want to just read the whole list?
Sure. Flapping their hands, banging their head against the wall, rocking their body, spinning, pacing back and forth repeatedly. And a great example of repetitive behavior in real circumstance would be a child with autism lining up his or her toy cars or dolls, and then, instead of playing with them, claps or flaps their hands repeatedly. The behavior we see may make the person feel better and have a soothing effect or be a way of expressing their frustration. Interesting.
So I really like this part because repetition is so normal and so important. When we need to start worrying is really when a repetitive behavior becomes a distraction.
Gotcha.
That it competes with learning opportunities or interferes with a person's living activities, or if it is disruptive to others or dangerous. So if a repetitive activity seems harmless to us, mm-hmm. and it is productive.
Hmm.
That is really good. That's a good sweet spot.
That makes sense.
So if like a child is more preoccupied with flopping their, so the child who stops doesn't actually play after they set up these toys and is distracted by flapping their hands, then we want to look into it a little bit more. And obviously if a repetitive behavior is dangerous or violent, or is extremely physical. Those are things that we want to look into. So they had an example. If an individual spins excessively to the point of throwing up regularly, that's a problem. Oof. So if any of these situations occur, an intervention is needed. As we've said before, lots of times, I mentioned this in the grief episode, when in doubt, always seek help. There's no problem with seeking help. The worst thing that could happen if your child doesn't need intervention is that you seek out intervention and they say, oh, your child doesn't need intervention. So you're not going to lose anything from that. There's lots of resources, and a lot of the people that we've had on as guests, I bet would love if you reached out to them and asked them some questions if you wanted advice from an expert. So always seek out help if you have any questions. But in general, repetition is important and is how children are going to learn. So we want to be supportive of it. So here is kind of like some steps to take to support repetition.
Provide supportive and regular routines for your child to feel safe.
So this is kind of what we talked about with Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Mm.
That's the number one first step that you can do to support your child in good productive repetitive behavior is make sure that they feel safe, make sure right. that they have routines, they know what's going on. And so they feel like, yeah, they feel safe to do what they need to do.
Yeah, I like that. Productive yeah. environment for productive mind.
Yep. The second one, the next step is to provide the opportunity for repetition. Okay. So you provided the environment. Now we need to like set up more specifics of a space for them to engage in this. So one is free play. That's one of the reasons we love free play so much in like a Reggio environment, giving them space to explore things on their own and having adequate time to complete activities. So if most of your day is taken up with structured activities and you are controlling the repetition, it doesn't give time for them to explore it themselves, which we're aiming for, right? And it also just, they don't get engaged in it that long. It's like that story that Maria Montessori told at the beginning where the girl was playing for like, she did 40 tries of this thing that was time consuming. If we're not giving them the time that they need. And often it really takes children a long time to get into deep play, like good productive play.
That's why I wish extracurricular activities weren't so short.
Right.
Learning extensions identify a repetition, favorite story, movie, activity, or song, and extend this by drawing pictures, reflecting on similarities and differences, and encouraging them to preempt words or actions. Set up provocations and add to it to keep it fresh. Love it. I'm a big fan of provocations.
Yeah, I had to add that to the list of like, you know, flashcards is not what we're after, but setting up a provocation for us to literally support this. Oh, my child is interested in this. He keeps telling me the story over and over again. Let me put out something so he can explore this in a different realm. And on that note, next one is multisensory instructions. So delve deeper by asking questions such as, what does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it sound like? These instructions will encourage your child to retain new information. And I did that tonight. In my rendition of the Three Little Pigs, I stopped and would ask him, like, what do you think a house made out of sticks would smell like? And some of his answers were super. I think that, what does a house made out of sticks smell like? He said, tall, like daddy.
Interesting. So, that's not a smell.
Not on at all. But a little bit late when I was talking about the house made out of bricks, then he made a connection. And John occasionally, I have no idea what this game is called. John has this game, a computer game that he likes to play, that it's like he builds a world and it has like dinosaurs in it. It's like kind of prehistoric-y time.
I don't know this game.
He specifically, like, Leo loves watching him play it. So generally on Saturdays when I go grocery shopping, Leo generally gets to play the dinosaur game is what I know it as.
That's really cute.
That's what Leo calls it. Yeah.
I think that's every dad's dream.
Yeah. I think John really loves it. but he made the connection. It was a little delayed. It took him a minute. But while we were talking about the brick house, he was like, in the dinosaur game, we make a house. There's a house of sticks. Like, he lives in a house of sticks. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like that. Like, daddy goes in a house, built a house of sticks or something like that, where it was like he made an actual connection. And then later on, I think it was the first time he made this connection at the end. The reason why the brick house did not fall down is because it was stronger than the other two materials. Like, and this was, I should have recorded this interaction, taken a transcription of what he said, but
look at you, you good mom, spending time with him and not focusing on your phone.
Yeah.
See?
Well, this is bedtime. Well, and sometimes I really want to rush through. Like, I have the fast version where I literally say as fast as I can, which he also finds entertaining. So it's fine.
I bet.
But you know, like it's sometimes it's really annoying, these repetitive things. But yeah, it was a really cool connection to take time to break it up a little bit more. And yeah, so he made this, what he said, let me know that he, I think for the first time, had made this connection that the reason why this brick house stayed up is because it was stronger than That's the awesome. Straw and the sticks. So yeah, multisensory, asking questions like, what does it smell like? How did they feel? And I love the idea of giving, like, that would be really fun one day for me to set up a provocation where he has straw and sticks and like rocks or bricks or something where he can try to recreate this.
You know, he would thrive with that.
Like, just yeah, that would actually be, I really want to do this activity pretty soon. I think that it will, especially because John is back to working and I need to not sit him in front of the TV all day long so I can get work done. So I think that this is an activity that's coming up in our future.
I'm excited to see how this goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to figure out how I want to do it exactly, but maybe like clay. Like I want it to be a little bit more for like, cause if he just stacks up like
yeah,
it's blocks, not gonna, it's not going to necessarily be stronger than
you could do sticks. Clay, three pieces of clay, provide the materials to put in the clay. So strict straw, rocks to represent bricks, and then give him images of houses made out of these materials and see what he does.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
It would be yeah. really cool.
Anyways, I'll let you know how it goes, but
please, I'm excited. You'll have to do some self-reflection. Which is the next one on our list. Reinforce the positive aspects of repetition by asking your child about what they enjoy doing throughout the day. Speaking of which, remind them about what they enjoyed the previous day. This will encourage them to self-reflect, which will assist them in learning things more completely and quickly.
Yeah, the best preschool experiences I've been in, like where children, I think, really get a lot out of it, is where they are allowed to keep things set up until they're done. And so they really get, instead of having to start afresh every single time, that's why it was kind of nice when I was a nature teacher at the Compass School that I had the field and it was pretty much just my classroom. And so I was able to leave things. So they'd build something and it could stay there. And like I had other classes come in and so they'd move things around and have to tell children that it might not be left exactly the same. But there were a lot of projects that were done that the class could just come back and continue where they left off. And it's really cool to see that.
It is. It's fantastic. I miss that about having, when I had a stable art classroom, that's what we would do. Is we would have projects set up long-term that they could come back to. It's made more sense, you know? There's a sense of like ownership as well.
Yeah, for sure. And that's nice having my own house. Unfortunately, Leo calls our front room the playroom.
Oh.
And it really annoys me because nobody has ever referred to that as the playroom. That is not his playroom. It's like our main living room. But that is where he plays the majority of the time. So it's funny that he calls it the playroom, but he is able to leave things in there for as long as we don't have somebody coming over. Very recently, Leo and John built a house out of wooden blocks that they had little wooden people inside and then animals on the outside. And the building was protecting the people from the jungle animals.
Cool.
And that was set up for a little while. And it was cool for him to get into that play a little bit more. And he started having a lot more repetition with that game. He'd play the same scenario over and over again with it.
Oh, I love it. It makes sense. Just keep the fun going. Why stop it? Why pause it?
Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they forget. So it's nice to have that prompt of like, what did you do yesterday that you enjoyed? Let's try that again today. See how we feel about it today. See what else we learn from it today. And then the last one that's really important, the last step is patience.
Patience. Let's repeat that.
Let's repeat that. I see what you did there. But this is definitely the hardest part, I think, of this subject. Is having the patience because it is sometimes annoying. So when a child's inclination towards repetition, it while a child's inclination
when it's towards, not you
when it's not
while when it's child, not charming
then shut it down. While a child's inclination towards repetition is not the most charming part of childhood and maybe is even one of the top most annoying parts of being around a child, it is an extremely important fundamental of child development. Tell the story again, sing that song again, play that game again. When we support the child's need for repetition, we are trusting and respecting their nature. We are supporting their learning and their development. We are celebrating childhood. Woo-hoo! And that's what we are all about here on The Speckled Bees.
The song I'd like to leave tonight with Lucy, I think, is the best and most annoying example of repetition. Baby shark do-do-do-do-do, baby shark do-do-do-do.
If you'd like her to stop singing, you should follow us, and you should.
What is it they always say? You should like, subscribe, and...
rate, review, and subscribe. Don't forget to send in your stories for our 50th episode. Tell us your childhood experiences. Any kind of story from your childhood will do.
Anything.
Anything. But especially the ones that celebrate childhood. Send us a soundbite or a...
voice memo.
Or write it and we'll read it for you.
Yay.
Thanks for listening. Speckled Bees. Buzzy now. Are we gonna get sued?